My guest today is Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield. He grew up in Oregon with parents differing in political perspectives. His mother was a Green Party member, his father a Republican. Dan received his law degree from Willamette University and has 18 years of experience with a focus on consumer protection. As a Democrat, he served in Oregon State Legislature, including as House Speaker, before being elected last year as Attorney General. Now he oversees 1,500 employees at the Oregon Department of Justice. Attorney General Dan Rayfield, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thanks for inviting us back. Really appreciate it.
Well, you have a broad scope of responsibility, so let's start by reminding our listeners what the State Attorney General's office does.
You know, the way I try and explain it to people is though you are the attorney for a business, and effectively in this case, it's for the state. And when you think about the state, think about it in terms of its agencies, and then think about the state in terms of its people. So in some cases where the state is harmed, you can think about bigger cases like the opioid Monsanto. We represent the people of Oregon to recover those harms when a company in, you know, like in the Monsanto case, that has polluted our environment and there's cost to us, instead of us as taxpayers having to pay for that harm, we want Monsanto to come in and pay for that. So you play a role there. You play a role in community safety. So we think about organized crime, helping district attorneys out across this state. We play a role in keeping our communities safe. And we play a role in advising our agencies from, you know, complying with our laws to simple things such as entering into contracts. And then right now what takes up a lot of oxygen in the room is obviously in the federal side of the world, where things are going on that are impacting our state, you know, by the Trump administration, where they are crossing the bounds of whether it's our Constitution or existing federal laws, and we kind of hold their feet to the fire and say, no, you got to follow the rule, the laws of the land in this context. So that's kind of a short snippet of, and there's much more, right? We do child support. And I know there's a lot to talk about, but I think in that broad context, that's how I think it's easy to think about the role.
Okay, well, there's a lot going on in our nation from federal to state issues. What's top of mind for you?
You know, we talk about three things is that our focus, and we've been talking about them for a really long time. The first thing is our job is to protect working families, seniors, and kids in our communities. And that can be things like run-of-the-mill consumer protection issues where you've got predatory towing to scams that are going on in our communities and bigger cases. So that's in this one bucket. Then you've got this other bucket. How do we keep communities safe? And right now, I mean, whether you're in Southern Oregon or you're up in the Portland area, right, you're going to see human trafficking, labor trafficking. You're going to see drug trafficking. How can we better assist from the Department of Justice to help keep our communities safe and kind of curb some of this big activity? So we're focused in that realm. And then right now, again, what really takes up a lot of the oxygen right now of attorneys general across this country is really making sure that we are holding the line when it comes to holding the federal government and the Trump administration accountable when they're violating our Constitution, they're violating our rights, when they're going against what Congress has actually enacted in law. And so that is another big thing. I think when people are thinking about the Attorney General's office, that's often what a lot of people are seeing right now.
Well, let's focus on that bucket for a moment. Some have called the dynamics that we're experiencing at the federal level a political civil war. And at risk are truth, public trust, and institutional integrity. And all three are under attack by our federal government. The biggest question that I'm hearing is simply, who can we trust?
That is such an incredible broad question from we look at our media to our politicians. We have a changing society where people are getting their information more from Twitter and social media than they used to, say, 30 to 40 years ago, where you had a lot of trusted news institutions. I think people's trust in where they get their news is a big issue. And I think the trust of the words coming out of our politicians' mouth is incredibly questionable at times and frankly just blatant lies. And so what we're trying to focus on, at least here at the Department of Justice, is focusing in the tools that we have in the judiciary and holding people's feet to the fire. So we all agree, you know, that It doesn't matter who you are, nobody is above the law. So if you're the president, you got to follow the Constitution. If you are, an officer in the community, you got to follow the Constitution. And so that is how we've been trying to, move forward in allowing this discourse, this argument to take place in a courtroom, right, where there's this finding of facts by an independent judiciary. I think the challenging thing in our moment in time is, while I think I do have a tremendous amount of faith in that system, and it does get stress tested and people are challenging that system, I think that's where my worry becomes, where you have, a body of Congress, one of those co-equal branches of government, the executive branch, the president, another co-equal branch of government that starts to challenge the integrity of the judicial system that we have in place. And I think that's where I get incredibly nervous.
Well, I'm going to set the record straight right now. I have a trust in you and the work that you're doing, because you're on the front lines of this political civil war, and you're representing the interests of Oregonians. And so we do have a certain amount of trust that we put in you. And I know trust is a heavy issue to start with, but I feel like nothing else matters if we don't have the basic elements of truth and trust. And in May of this year, Pew Research reported that a mere 22% of Americans trust the federal government to do what is right. And so we literally need our state leaders to defend our democratic institutions from the executive branch. Is that possible?
I believe it is. I would also say that you count me in the skeptics of, of folks that are worried about our federal government standing up for what we think is best at given times. I mean, there are a lot of people that I trust, but I think as elected officials, as politicians, we have to earn our trust, and it goes beyond mere words. And I think sometimes we become so focused in on our party or on certain, things where we lose sight of, why are we running for these positions? What are our focuses here? So for me, where, I can look at the role that we're in the court system, and I can tell you that we have 33 lawsuits filed right now. I think of the 33, 16 of those, we've gotten preliminary injunctions, right, which really pause the actions of the federal administration. And we have 8 pending. Right. And some of them we're not even asking for that type of relief immediately. And so I do see in the lower courts a positive trend. That doesn't mean that I don't like some of the stuff that's coming out of the Supreme Court, because I don't. However, I'm trying to keep the powder dry and work through this system to really hold the line. And so far, in a lot of the cases where we have gotten these preliminary injunctions, we do have a federal government that is complying with those court orders. And so it's going to be, I think this next year is going to be really important for our democracy to see how these play out, because there's some blatant unconstitutional actions, that have occurred that should be no-brainers for the Supreme Court as they wind their way up.
In case you're just joining us, my guest is Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield. You can send your questions or comments by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Are there still 3 co-equal branches of the federal government?
On paper, there absolutely are. And I believe in function, and in theory, there are. I worry that Congress is ceding its power to the executive in some of the, and if via inaction at times, via condoning the behavior of our president. I believe you have Congress and the president attacking the judiciary in a way that undermines its independence, that undermines itself being a co-equal branch of government. And so I do believe these next few years are going to be incredibly important in kind of, holding the line there. I think there have been some really good moments, in the last 6 months coming from some of our judges. You've even had rebukes by our Chief Justice of the president and actually honing in on some of these essential roles. But again, I think it's a very precarious place to be to have two branches of government attacking the judiciary, right? And also to have Congress almost willingly wanting to cede its constitutionally delegated powers to a president. That should bother all of us. I mean, that's what we were taught in grade school about the foundations of our democracy, which were rooted in problems in different types of governments that were not working for us as people. So again, I think these next couple of years are going to be incredibly important for our democracy.
Well, we're all still watching for sure and, sort of waiting with bated breath to see what's going to happen, because a lot of what we're witnessing looks like performative politics. And I'm wondering, does the nation still operate under the idea that there are existing checks and balances across three branches of the federal government?
When we, when we look at cases here in the state, or when we see the federal government acting, we are acting as though that there are three co-equal branches of government, and we are working to enforce that. In fact, a lot of the cases that we bring, you might see, like you think about the tariffs case, and a lot of people, as you think about that, that's impacting us, right? They've already taken $1 billion of revenue in on the tariffs, and under that, if you look at pure economics, that means that's actually a tax on all of us. It's a regressive tax that we're all paying. Now, we can sit there and say we don't have the money to pay for that as everyday households across this country. But the foundations of the lawsuit that we are bringing is specifically focused on the separation of powers and co-equal branches of government. A lot of the things that are going on in the court, the battles that we're having may be over funding, they may be over tariffs, it's over birthright citizenship, but the foundational issues that we are arguing in court right now are these incredible principles of a healthy democracy that we're trying to enforce. And so it's very interesting when you really start digging into some of those arguments.
So we're hoping that the judicial branch can make sense of all this, but do the states still have constitutional power that they have not yet ceded to the federal government?
Absolutely. And the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, again, like for instance, when we think about our sanctuary status laws here in the state, we're ritually founded in public safety. There is the 10th Amendment that protects the states, right? And where the federal government can't commandeer state resources for these federal purposes. So I believe the protections are in place. I do believe we are seeing some lower court rulings that are incredibly supportive and heartwarming. I always look in, in the tariffs case, right? You had, judges appointed by Trump, Reagan and Clinton that are upholding unanimous, right? And these are the things. It's not, if I was sitting in, Republican shoes and watching the courts and it was all of these judges only appointed by Democrats, I probably would be a little bit, my eyebrows would raise. But the reality that we're seeing right now is you have judges appointed by Trump, Republicans, Democrats, all feeling the same way. And they're all ruling very similarly. And again, that should kind of open people's eyes up to what's going on right now.
Well, we have a couple of minutes before we have to take a break. And we've been on the national scope for a moment. But you're holding town halls as part of your Safeguarding Oregon Federal Oversight Series. What are you hearing?
And first, I mean, just for people to know, the reason that we started holding these hearings is a democracy. When you're making decisions, those decisions should be engaging and have public input. And if you remember the first 3 months of the Trump administration, and even to this day, they are making a lot of decisions that are impacting all of us in our daily lives, and they're doing it without public input. They're doing it unilaterally. They're doing it in closed room doors. And so we started to hold hearings with kind of a two focus. One was, if the federal government isn't going to allow public input on the big decisions they're making, we're going to do it for them. And so you have AGs across this country that are holding these forums. Number two, for us, what's really helpful is to hear from people about the impacts, because sometimes we hear about things that we didn't know about, and it allows us to better represent folks. So the type of things we hear are going to be, think about food assistance. We've heard the full chain of supply when it comes to food, where you've had farmers that have contracts with the federal government that they've relied upon to put food in the ground, and then they get canceled, right? So they've relied upon the government. They've got a financial harm. Then you hear about, you know, the folks that are distributing food into community, and they're being impacted. And then you hear the frontline individuals are the folks that receive food. So that full chain of supply, you hear about our federal employment and the loss of employment and how that is having a ripple impact on recruitment and retention. And what does that mean for essential services that the federal government provides, whether it is, you know, your fire service, whether it's Social Security, or whether it's health benefits along the way.
Let's hold it right there. And because when we come back, we're going to pick up on that. We need to take a short break. Now, before the break, Attorney General Dan Rayfield and I were talking about the Safeguarding Oregon Federal Oversight Series, and that's a series of town halls that are listening sessions. Am I describing that correctly?
That's right. And we also do give a little bit of time for questions as well, because I think we want to be as engaging as we possibly can in these forums.
So what are you hearing? You were talking about what you were hearing just before we went to the break. Continue with that.
Yeah, it's a broad range of things, from federal employment to food assistance. There are incredibly personal stories that we've heard. One of the things that strikes me is we've heard from TSA agents that are concerned about, you know, workforce issues and safety. We've heard folks from VA hospitals where you have had services that have been shut off without notice. It is an incredibly wide-ranging set of impacts to businesses that are being impacted here in Oregon, frankly, across this country, where they are playing games with tariffs and staging goods, and trying to move them into the United States based upon the whims of the president on any given day on what may or may not happen with tariffs. We've heard from, you know, there was a company in Eugene where the only place that they can get a portion of the goods that they assemble here in the United States that comes from overseas, right? And they have, and there's not the squish in their budgets to absorb that. And so that has to be passed down to consumers. So it's pretty wide ranging and incredibly intimate stuff that people share.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's happening at the national level that's impacting us at the local level. Earlier this year, the Trump administration shut down the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ. And today, President Trump is embroiled in a massive scandal involving the Jeffrey Epstein files, and there have been mass firings across the federal government and within the Department of Justice. And now whistleblowers are reporting a culture of fear inside the FBI. And some members of Congress are suggesting the Trump administration has an enemies list. This is wild. And the Speaker of the House is shutting down the Congress to temporarily stop the investigation into the Epstein scandal. And there's this erosion of trust in the courts. And of course, Trump's big bill is now law, which is increasing funding for ICE operations while decreasing funding for healthcare, Medicaid, veterans, and our most vulnerable populations. And that's not to mention that Congress has also cut funding for public media and foreign aid while he's also cutting funding for education, libraries, museums, and any entity that dares to disrupt whatever narratives Trump chooses to flood the nation with. And now we're looking at him sue the Wall Street Journal and its owner, Rupert Murdoch, for billions of dollars for publishing the truth. How in the world does this derailed Democratic train get back on track?
Well, this isn't the America that I grew up in. And a lot of the actions that are coming out of the federal government right now, a lot of those things that you talked about are anti-American in terms of all of the values. And I don't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat moving forward. There are fundamental democratic principles and beliefs that every single American shares that are being violated right now. And it can feel incredibly overwhelming, right? To sit there and say, how are we going to change this entire national discourse overnight? And the fact is, you're not. What we have to focus on are the things that we can control in our spheres of influences. And I mean our collective spheres of influences. And I don't care whether you live like me in Corvallis, whether you're in Portland, Eastern Oregon, right? There are things that we can do individually to be a part of this system as we start to shift things. How do we shift the balance in Congress? How do we have a vision and run on something as opposed to running against things? In this role, the Department of Justice, it is incredibly incumbent upon all of us to fulfill our roles and rebuild that trust. And you lead with the values that people elected to put you in those positions. So for us, one of the big things is upholding Oregon values. And I know these values are held across the political spectrum and holding the Trump administration accountable there. But then it's also working within this state and doing the bread and butter things that people expect out of state government. And what is our collective responsibility, the Department of Justice, to help and be a part of the process to rebuild trust and fight against what I would call as these anti-American agendas that are coming out of the federal government right now. And I think each individual agency, each respective elected office, and then it does trickle down to all of us and our families as well.
Well, I mentioned trust early on, and we trust you. You're representing Oregon's interest. But at the end of the day, we don't know how to trust the courts. We don't know how to trust Congress, and we certainly can't trust the Trump administration. Let's talk about the rights of citizenship. The 14th Amendment was established in 1868 when radicals in Congress were adamant about transforming a white America with a whites-only national citizenry into a more diverse, equitable, and inclusive America. They didn't try to change the people. They sought to change the laws, the economic systems, and the public policies. And in a single decade, they introduced 8 new civil rights laws, including 3 changes of the Constitution. And one of those changes was the 14th Amendment to extend the rights of citizenship to Black people and others who were born on American soil. Now, the Trump administration is asking the court for a ruling that would jeopardize citizenship rights under the 14th Amendment for immigrant families with children born in America. This is a culture of fear that they're spreading. Will the courts concede to Trump?
Earlier, when we talked about, you know, there's some slam dunk issues for the Supreme Court moving forward. And what we're collectively talking about right now is birthright citizenship, right? If you're born on American soil, you are an American citizen. There's a lot of rhetoric coming out of the Trump administration right now that they want to change that. And frankly, as you pointed out, they've made an executive order with an action that directly countermands our Constitution and this amendment. I feel confident that as it winds this way through courts, that you're going to have Republican judges and Democratic judges alike that are going to put their foot down. And the reality is, if you want to have this conversation, if you want to change the Constitution, you can do that, right? We are America. We can have a discourse of ideas and do that. But you got to do it the right way. And there are procedures set up in our United States Constitution where they can have that conversation openly and honestly with the American people and see whether the Americans want to change this. I don't believe they do. And I believe that our judges are going to uphold our Constitution. This is a very bright line issue. And I think it will be incredibly telling if they don't. And that is where I think you really start to bend, you know, the realities of the words that are set forth on our Constitution. And that's why I feel pretty confidently that the United States Supreme Court is going to, hold the Trump administration accountable with respect to this.
Well, while we're waiting for the judicial branch to stand up, are you concerned about the intentional cruelty and trauma that's fostered by the Trump administration across the nation?
I think that's the toughest thing about this job, Mike. It is an incredibly reactive position to be in. And I can sit there and have my confidence and focus that down the road, right, we're going to get the right ruling in the Supreme Court on birthright citizenship. But it does not change the immediate impacts that are being felt across this country. And that's where it is a struggle, where it's like I have to focus on the tools that I have, knowing in the long term the outcome is going to be there. But people are being harmed day to day. I was absolutely disturbed, gut-wrenched reading an Oregonian article yesterday about a parent that was had their child in the car and was removed. And we're like looking in our office. We see stuff like, and I was like, how can we help? And sometimes we don't have the immediate tools, right? It's reactive. That stuff should never go on. It's incredibly bothersome and hurtful, the things that are going on in our communities right now.
Well, there's also privacy issues, and they're deeply concerning to me and many others with the rapid growth of artificial intelligence. And now the Trump administration has invited tech sector leaders into the inner sanctum of federal databases and given them access across all of the government agencies. Now ICE is being given access to information on Medicaid recipients. That's crazy. Well, what's your understanding of what's happening at the IRS, the Treasury Department, Social Security, Homeland Security, Department of National Intelligence, DOD, about these privacy concerns?
I mean, people have expectations of privacy, in your community with the information that you give to the government. And I think that has been eroded away in 6 months in a way that I don't think any of us thought possible. So you have attorneys general across, a lot of these issues we've been talking about, right? We have 33 lawsuits currently filed against the Trump administration. And we're winning a lot of them in the lower courts right now. And so this is one of those areas that we are pushing back against the Trump administration and their use of information or their attempted use of information for purposes that we think are wholly inappropriate and violate all of our sense of privacy. And so it's an incredibly difficult place. And you have a Congress, a Republican-controlled Congress that is complicit with what is going on. And it's like, where are you both parties standing up saying that this is not appropriate. This is not how we intend federal government to operate. So it's incredibly concerning.
Well, we're hoping that the people still have some power. There's a lot of talk about the midterm elections next year. And of course, that raises the question of election integrity. And we see what's happening in Texas, where it's already engaged in efforts to gerrymander the voting maps. What's happening here in Oregon?
What I can tell you what's happened across the country as well. So we as Democratic Attorneys General, this is something that's on our radar. This is something we talk about. This is something we're prepared for. You have Secretary of State, and I know Secretary of State Tobias Reed is another person here in our state that is incredibly focused on the integrity. And these are things that we can control and push back. And so as we start seeing things that push the bounds of integrity in our elections. What I can tell you is, as Democrats, we will be prepared for that. I think the integrity of elections is foundational to having a functional democracy. And that is something that we are laser focused on right now in terms of some of the protections moving forward in Republican states, but also, it's incredibly important in all states, including Democrat states.
Okay, but before we get there, there's going to be a lot more cuts in contracts and cuts of programs, research, and education. They're all taking a toll here in Oregon. How do you assess the landscape of adverse impacts of federal funding cuts across our state?
But I mentioned, this is a big subset of those 33 lawsuits. I think right now in Oregon, of those lawsuits, we are protecting more than $3.3 billion of funds coming into the state. That is an incredible amount of money for a state like the size of Oregon. And that can have impacts across the board. I think in combination with economic uncertainty, in combination with a Congress that seems hell-bent on cutting essential services for vulnerable Oregonians and citizens across our country, those things start to add up. And our states are not built to backfill the level of federal investments that come in. And that ultimately impacts all of us. Two weeks ago, we were on the coast in Lincoln City hearing about the impacts and the cuts to NOAA out on the coast. And how does that impact our fisheries? How does that ripple out into so many other different industries that I think most Oregonians we know about, but we haven't internalized? And it is going to hit us like a bag of bricks as if these things were allowed to continue, which gets to kind of your point. You have incredible amount of power through elections. And I think this next election cycle is incredibly important to really kind of send a message about what do we want our country to look like? What do we want our states to look like? And if you don't like what's going on, it doesn't matter what party you are, we need to elect the right people in office across this country to really start effectuating that vision.
Well, I saved my biggest question for last. When are you coming here to Jackson County?
I am excited because we are coming down your way here pretty soon. And I believe it is on the 7th. We're going to be in your neck of the woods with a Medford town hall. And I believe, actually, we just got the location secured. I think it's actually going to be on SOU's campus. So it may be down in Ashland. But that will be on the 7th of August. We'll be down your way. So if it makes sense, we'd love to stop by and say hello in person.
That's a deal. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you for joining me today. Really appreciate it.
Take care. Thank you.